Okay, shalom everyone. We're doing review of last week. We're now in our third week of our OU, JLSE, Learning Fellowship. And we're going to review. Okay, so last week, who remembers what we talked about, class?
Rambam.
2 points for you. Okay, so last week we talked about the Rambam. What did the Rambam say? Why don't we fill in the chart? Some people filled in last week, some people didn't. Seems like most people did. Okay, so it's the Rambam, we talked about different categories, right? Who remembers some of the categories? What? Halacha Moshe Misinai. Right? Halacha Moshe Misinai, which means what?
You're not be close.
That's not what it means. Yeah, okay.
We're being recorded.
You're always being recorded, Jiro. Just not always with a recorder. What's halacha Moshe Misinai?
The halacha that we're given to Moshe at Sinai.
Okay, good. The halacha that we're given to Moshe Sinai. Okay. What was the example that we used? Tefillin, right? What was the defining factor? Okay, that's the defining factor. Yeah, but what's the defining factor of halacha Moshe Misinai?
No one argues.
Okay, that's a the Rambam claims that there was never machlokas regarding halacha Moshe Misinai. But what is it? What's the defining factor of halacha Moshe Misinai regarding the text?
There's none,
right? There's no connection between halacha Moshe Misinai and the text of the Torah HaKadosha. Okay, what was the next thing we talked about?
Explanations,
good. And they refer to as?
Pirush
HaMekubal Misinai. Right? Pirush HaMekubal Misinai. Pirush HaMekubal. Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. Perishim Akul Misinai is explanations that were given at Har Sinai that are passed down, right? And what is the defining factor of those?
Wow, that's terrible.
See?
They have this cool.
It's really good.
This invention, it's called milk and sugar. Sugar's part.
It's in the text, but it's a confusing pasuk.
It's in the text, but it's a confusing pasuk, right? And we also said that there's no machlekes regarding Perishim Akubal Misinai, according to Maimonides. And we said that, what was the example we gave of this?
Etrog.
We need some more participation here, people. Mr.
This side of the table's been pretty solid.
The middleman. Yeah. I like this machlekes. What? Huh? Why not?
Good point.
Okay, so the defining factor of... No, so the example we gave last week of a Perishim Akul Misinai was the Torah says, L'kach l'lchem pre-eitz hadar. Mazda pre-eitz hadar. What is a beautiful fruit? A beautiful fruit is an etrog. How else would you have known that?
That's not asking.
Walking too fast. Okay, so Perishim Akul Misinai is that. Then we got to the Ikar. We got to the crux of the Shir. Mel, what was the crux of the Shir?
The 13 principles.
The 13 principles? Of extrapolation. Good. What do they do?
Use them to extrapolate the text.
Verses
from the text.
We'll use them to extrapolate the text. Right under your nose. We use them to extrapolate the text. Okay, good. So let's fill out this chart for those who didn't fill it out. If you didn't fill it out, then you should do that now. So fine. So we just do the first box. Not really. What is it? So according to the Rambam, what's the point of the halachic process? I.e., what are we trying to do when the rabbis are debating and the like?
Use logic. Figure out what was going on.
Okay, we're using logic. We're trying to figure out. What do you mean by figure out what's going on?
To it and what they're actually talking about. I don't actually know
what's happening. Close. Well, that's why you're here last week, to figure it out.
To figure out the law,
right? God gave us 13 principles. He didn't give us that many laws, right? According to the Rambam, God didn't actually give us that many laws on Har Sinai. Rather, he gave us principles, and we use those principles to try to figure out exactly what the law was. What the law is, right? what the law is. Okay, so that's why. So according to the Rambam, What are the other boxes here? What's the reason for machlokas according to the Rambam?
That they interpret it differently.
Good. That different people interpret it differently, right? You have 13 principles, and people interpret things differently because people are different, right? According to the Rambam, ideally, there is no machlokas. Ideally, you know, we should all see eye to eye on how, on using legal principles the same way. But, you know, we don't all see the same, we don't all think the same, we don't all have the same background, yada yada, right? And therefore, that's why, as time went on, machlokas increased, because I guess there were more players on the scene. Truth of the matter is, I was thinking about this more and more and discussing with a friend, and this part of the Rambam is not exactly so clear, but why he's so bothered by machlokas. Right, why? Because, like, you know, different people are going to think different ways. But, okay. You know, we saw that he read that Gemara about Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, how they only had three machlokas, we said from Tosos from the first week, and how their students had more machlokas, right? And the Gemara says because they didn't Meshamash at Rabbam, they didn't follow their teachers as properly as they should have. But the Rambam really wanted to read that more as they did, like, kind of Yerida Sidoros, that as the generations go on, people become less intelligent and they're maybe not studying as hard, and there's also outside factors involved. So we said based on all that, that's why there's machlokas nowadays. But we're all doing our best trying to apply these 13 principles. What were some of the advantages of the Rambam?
We don't lose anything.
We didn't lose anything. Good. According to the Rambam, right, nothing was lost. The transmission is 100%. Halacha Moshe Misinai's, those are 100%. We never lost those. Perishim Akubo Misinai's, we never lost those. And the Yogim Omidos, we have them, and we were always supposed to work with them. That's how the kind of the divine system was. Now, what about the disadvantages?
You could say that if we have a machloket about something that we think it's from God, then you say, no, that's not what that was from. That was also supposed to be learned out from the 13 principles. That's what we said last week.
Clarify that. What do you mean?
You said that it would be a downside, like if there was something that we weren't sure about, and you'd say, oh, this came specifically, this was like halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Uh-huh. Say, no, it was actually supposed to be thought out.
Right, so I don't know if that was a downside of the... Exactly, it's a downside of the theory almost, because, like, you know, it kind of call... You can... I was just kind of pointing out as a catch, almost like a catch-22 in the Rambam, that you can never prove him wrong. Because anything that has a machlokas, you'll say, oh, it's not broken, it's really just this. So, yeah, that's the point.
And the other thing you said is...
Good word.
Huh? Is that... You have the question, why didn't God give us an answer?
Right, maybe why, right, some people are unhappy with the idea that God didn't give us one answer, right, why would he let us, why isn't there one answer that we want to work with? Okay, so that was the Rambam. This week we have the Ramban. Everyone has sheets? Everyone's good? Okay, the problem is that your sheets, the first source didn't come out clearly.
I was wondering what that was.
What?
I was wondering what that was.
Couldn't figure it out.
I was wondering why it came out that way.
What?
I was like, why it came out that way?
It's the best one. Oh, really? I thought you were going to be freaking out about it. No?
I don't remember, but I think I really liked it.
I can't read it.
Okay.
You're
wrong. Rambam.
Rambam. Sorry. I'm not going to say the
Pastor
Mugad,
the lover. What?
Actually,
I'm using
the
law. Okay.
Actually,
no, this is the annoying one, but it is, like, kind of nice.
Okay, says the Torah Kedoshah.
I really like Rambam. Anyway.
It says in the Torah Kedoshah. Okay, guys, the first source. You can't read it, so if you want to write it down, if you want to just figure out how to read it, you know, the Ramban actually says that it's like a midrash. So the Torah was given a black fire on white fire. I have no idea what that means, but Alana can tell you later. But one of the explanations that the Ramban has in his introduction is that there's like a theory that the Torah was, what does it mean that also the Torah was created before the world, all these like weird things. There's somewhere out there this idea that the Torah was given as like one big word, like with no spaces, and like as we went along, the kind of the spaces were put in. So maybe that's like this pasuk here. And you gotta like put the spaces in. So you have to read it off the page.
That's what I was thinking though, like for a second, I'm like maybe this is like a classic Torah codes.
Right, there you go.
It's like one more word. But I couldn't find anything. I'm like, this is just weird.
Al pi Torah asher yirucha, v'al mishpat asher yamru lecha ta'ase, lo sasur min hadavar asher yigidu lecha yamin u'smol. Says the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 17, verse 11, according to the teaching that they will teach you, and according to the judgment that they will say to you, you shall do. You shall not deviate from the word they will tell you, right or left. First of all, who's the you? Who's talking and who's the you?
Is this Yahushua?
This is from the book of Deuteronomy.
Oh. The leaders are the people you shouldn't deviate from.
The leaders. Okay, so who's the leaders? The leaders are the Sanhedrin, right? So,
This is the verse.
I'm not really focusing on that today.
It's just like the only reason why we're listening to you right now.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know. Last time I checked, there wasn't a member of the Sanhedrin, but maybe tomorrow. Hashtag Mashiach now.
What?
Hashtag Mashiach
now.
What? Maybe everyone wants Mashiach.
Hashtag
Mashiach.
What?
That's too much. Okay. So.
That's what you can have to know.
So the verse says, according to the law, so first of all, right, Moshe is speaking the word of God to the people, and he's referring to the Sanhedrin, or to the rabbis, but the rabbis doesn't mean, like, you know, every Joe Schmo, every, like, you know, guy who calls himself a rabbi, but it's referring to the Sanhedrin, right? According to the law, they instruct you, according to the judgment that they say to you, you shall not divert from the word they tell you, either right or left. What's Rashi's question on the Pasuk? What should Rashi's question on the pasuk be? What's bothering Rashi? We read that book. No one? No takers?
What's bothering Rashi?
What? Yeah?
Yeah, I know the book. I know the answer.
Left or right.
What?
Why does it say nor left nor right?
Good! Why does it say either right or left? How would the pasuk read if it didn't say either right or left?
Just don't divert.
I'd say don't divert. So, I mean, okay, why does it say don't divert right or left? When you're not diverting, you're doing exactly what they say. Obviously, you're not going right or left, right? You're just doing what they say. Ask Rashi. The Ramban quotes Rashi, right? Source 2. I shall read in the foreign tongue. You shall not deviate right or left. Rashi explains that even if the Sanhedrin tell you that right is left or left is right, you must obey them. Meaning that even if you are certain that the Sanhedrin has erred and it is as obvious to you as the difference between your right and left, you still must comply with their understanding of the Torah. In other words, you can't argue. Sorry, in other words, you can't argue, how can I eat that which is prohibited by the Torah? How can I execute this person when I know he has not transgressed? Rather, your attitude must be, the absolute obedience to the ruling of the Sanhedrin is what God has commanded me, and I must observe the mitzvot exactly as the Sanhedrin, which is in God's presence in the temple, says. The Torah was given to me according to their understanding, even if they err. Right? So says the Ramban, that this is what Rashi is explaining. Rashi is explaining that you can't deviate right or left, that you have to follow exactly what they say, even if they say right is left and left is right. Even if they say something that's completely opposite to the way you see it, the way you see the truth, then you still have to follow what they say. He continues. This is what happened when Rabbi Yeshua had a dispute with the Sanhedrin as to what the Yom Kippur was. Right? Are people familiar with this Gemara?
Yeah.
For those unfamiliar, the Gemara in short is like this. It's not on your source sheets in length, but the footnote here points it out. A dispute once occurred between Rabban Gamliel, right, this comes from Tractate Rosh Hashanah. What happened here? A dispute once occurred between Rabban Gamliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin, and Rabbi Yeshua, concerning the determination of the day of the new moon of Tishrei. Right? They weren't sure when Rosh Chodesh Tishrei was. In short, right, we know that how do we determine Rosh Chodesh? Isn't this year in Kiddush Chodesh? But how do we determine Rosh Chodesh? We do it all Pia Re'iyah, right? You have to have witnesses, they have to see the moon. The Rabbi Gamliel used to have this chart with like different forms of the moon, and you would like, they would have to point to what they saw, and therefore he would be able to tell if they were lying or telling the truth. So he would hold up this, so Rabbi Yeshua held that the new moon should be declared one day after Rabbi Gamliel actually declared it. You know, so Rabbi Gamliel thought that the new moon should be on Aleph Tishrei, and Rabbi Yeshua said, no, it should be on Bet Tishrei. Oh, so how does that affect Yom Kippur?
Directly.
Right. Rabbi Gamliel thinks that Yom Kippur is on Yod Tishrei, and Rabbi Yeshua thinks Yom Kippur is on Yod Aleph Tishrei. So what did Rabbi Gamliel do? Therefore, hence, Yom Kippur, the 10th of Tishrei, according to Rabbi Yeshua, reckoning fell on the 11th of Tishrei, according to Rabbi Gamliel's reckoning. A leader of the Sanhedrin, Rabbi Gamliel, was the nation's legal authority. Rabbi Gamliel therefore ordered that Rabbi Yeshua desecrate the day he considered to be Yom Kippur, and thereby display publicly his acceptance of Rabbi Gamliel's ruling. The Gemara explains that the Gemara explains that he made him come carrying his stick and other stuff.
Money pouch.
His money pouch, yeah. what's called, I think it was Sun Chucky or something, carrying his money pouch and his stick on the day he thought it was Yom Kippur, because you have to listen to the authority. We can't have a dispersion of authority, but that's really just here for another time. You have to remember here, when we're reading this Ramban, a lot of this Ramban is about the power of rabbinic authority and why it's important, but that's not our topic. So don't get too caught up with that. It's all good. Rabbis should have a lot of power. But don't get too caught up with that. We're focused here on the question. Once again, what's our question? Our question is, what was given on Har Sinai? Right? So how does that have to do with anything like that? So what does he say here? He says, this is what happened. Rabbi Yeshua had a dispute with the Sanhedrin as to what day was Yom Kippur. Rabbi Gamliel, the head of the Sanhedrin, ordered Rabbi Yeshua to appear before him on the day he thought was Yom Kippur. The necessity for this mitzvah is very great, writes the Ramban. This is because the Torah was given to us in writing, and it is known that people don't think identically in all matters. Therefore, it would be natural for disputes over what the Torah means to continually multiply, and it would end up that there would be many Torot instead of one. This is why this verse tells you that one must obey the Sanhedrin which convenes in God's presence in the temple, in everything they say concerning the understanding of the Torah, whether they received it, whether they received its explanation in an unbroken testimonial chain, reaching back until Moshe, who receives it from the mouth of God, or, this is a key line, they say such explanations based on their understanding of the Torah's implications or its intent. This requirement to accept their Torah understanding is because the Torah was in fact given to us according to their understanding. Therefore, they must be obeyed even if their view contrasts with your understanding as left contrasts with right. And surely if you agree with their understanding. This is because God's spirit is on those who serve in his temple, and he does not desert his pious ones. God always protects them from error and mistake. The Sifri, the Midrash, says you must obey them even if it appears that they have reversed right with left and left with right. There's a lot of information there. A bunch of it is not really relevant for our topic right now. But I'll read you what Halpertel tell the article we've been quoting, how he summarized this opinion, and just so we understand where we're going in this year, we're presenting this idea which Halbertel calls the constitutive view, i.e., we'll see basically that we're constituting what is halacha, what is oral law, right? And how is that true? We're going to see the Ramban really introduces this idea, even though he's kind of vague about exactly what it is. We're going to see we have a split off of two different Rishonim. The Ramban is also Rishon, but two different other Rishonim trying to understand him. One being the Ran, and one being the Ritva. And the Ritva and the Ran both are within this camp, but they both have a little bit of a difference in their opinion. But you'll see that when we see the Ritva next, it makes it much clearer. But Halbertel explains the Ramban like this. He writes, quote, "This explanation does not recognize an a priori right and left. Rather, the court itself defines what is right and what is left. In other words, the court cannot be mistaken about the halacha because it has the privilege granted by the author to constitute the very meaning of the text." Huh?
Where is this?
On my source sheet.
Oh, okay.
So what's that saying? A priori, very big word. Not so many letters. But
Gospel word.
That's true. What's he saying?
What it's saying.
And I want to summarize, I'm happy to. I think what he's saying is this. The Ramban is saying, how come the Chachamim are allowed to say what is right and what is left? Because, what?
Or else there'd be anarchy.
Okay.
No.
You could do the sing-song voice off if you'd like. So the Ramban says that the Ramban says, yeah.
If there's no objective law, everything is just everyone else's opinion, and they can do whatever they want.
Yep.
There you go.
No, I'm saying that's why there has to be some objective.
So let's not get out. It's true the Ramban is spending a lot of time saying why we need to have centralized authority and how we can have too many Torah, and that'll be bad, fine, very nice, not our point today. What was given on Har Sinai? That's our question, right? Remember, that's our question. So how's he answering that question? Why are the Chachamim allowed to say right is left and left is right? Says the Ramban, at least according to Halbertel's explanation, we'll see if this is true from what the other Rishonim say about him, because on Har Sinai,
God said to do this, to listen to...
God said listen to the Chachamim and listen to their interpretation of the text. God didn't give an interpretation of the text. And you'll see that even... Who here, just for remember, was that our first year? The Chickish year?
You listened to it.
So if you were here, if you were listening to that one, which you should listen to, I'll send it all out, then that will really clarify things tonight. If you didn't, you might be a tiny bit lost, but I'll try to my best to fill you in. You'll see in the next Gemara, right? Rella, you were there, right?
Yeah.
And you were confused, so you can be more confused now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So what's the next source, right? Because we're going to see this idea, which some of you will be very bothered with.
I was confused about the last thing that you just said, that, like, we should listen to the Kohanim because God didn't give us...
So wait for this Gemara.
Okay.
Source 3 and source 4 will clear it up a lot more. The Ramban, now that I think about it more, the Ramban, I have to quote him because he's the first one to introduce the idea, but he doesn't spell it out nearly enough because also not really his point. We're kind of like, his point is about rabbinic authority. But the next Gemara in source 4 spell it out much more. Says the next source, and we saw this that night, that Thursday night. This is from Tractate Erubin.
Yay! You said it. You were so excited.
I'm
nobody
so
answered, so
Tamara
I was there for you.
Tamara was excited. I don't even know who left me. The tire is
there. Silent. Yeah, I won't be a cheerleader anymore.
We like cheerleaders.
Just you wait.
Isn't that what I got you pondering?
Yeah.
Okay. It says in the Babylonian Talmud, in Tractate Eruvin, page 13b, that Rav Abba stated in the name of Shmuel, in the name of Samuel, for 3 years there was a dispute between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. The former asserting the halacha is in agreement with our views, and the latter contending the halacha is in agreement with our views. Right? Beis Shammai thought they were right. Beis Hillel thought they were right. What happened? A bat kol, right? A heavenly voice issued. The bat kol issued, announcing the utterance of both are the words of the living God. Elu ve'elu, divrei Elokim chayim. However, but the halacha is in agreement with the ruling of Beit Hillel. Okay, so let's leave for now. We're not so interested in why the Baskel had to paskin and what we do when a Baskel paskins. Let's leave all that right now. What does it mean? Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, right? On the Thursday night when we had the shiur about Elu ve'elu, we talked about how that works in different realms, in Tanakh and Halacha and Midrash and Hashkafa. Good. Ayin Shel. You can listen to that shiur for Hazara. But what are we saying here? What was given on Har Sinai? Both these and those, both the opinion of Beit Shammai and the opinion of Beit Hillel, both A and not A, are both the opinion of the living God. Are both right? Are both true and words of the living God. How does the Ritba explain this in source 5? Right? The Ritba to Erubin, right, says source 4. What does he say here? The Ritba writes this. These and these are the words of the living God. So Ritva quotes Tosfos, right? He quotes Tosfos, and he writes, the French rabbis of blessed memory asked, right? French rabbis are Tosfos, how were it possible that both positions could be the words of the living God when one prohibits and one permits? How can God say A and not A? And they answered, and here, I hope this clears it up. When Moses ascended to heaven and received the Torah, right? When Moses ascended to heaven and received the Torah, what happened? They have shown him 49 reasons for prohibition and 49 reasons for permission concerning each rule. He asked God about this, and God answered that the matter will be given to the sages of Israel in each generation, and the ruling will be as they decide. So what happened on Har Sinai? I was there.
Oh, okay. Then that makes sense.
I just read the Ritva.
How does he know?
He has an Asura.
He's a Tone in town.
Also,
well, we'll talk about that in a sec. Yeah.
Where is Asura?
Of the 49.
His position's on the board.
Is this like a memory?
Yeah, but that's not a significance.
We need an improv chart. Okay, what's he saying?
Yeah.
Let's stick to the questions at hand. We can ask other questions after.
Sure.
What's he saying? What was given on Har Sinai?
Not every multiple possibility extension.
The idea that there's a possibility for multiple answers and opinions and stuff, and that's not the point of it, though. Not that there isn't one, but... Yeah. It makes sense in my head.
This is what happens when we learn too, don't worry. We have to interpret the
J.
They're
difficult to like put together.
So he's basically agreeing with the Ramban?
He's basically agreeing with the Ramban.
Yeah.
He's within the same camp. I think he's explaining the Ramban more, but yeah, what? What was given on Har Sinai? Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and God said, God said, you should know there's a category called a sheretz, right? There's a category called an insect. And did God, according to the Ravid, remember back to the first year, right? 3 weeks ago, according to the Ravid, God said there's a category called a sheretz, an insect, it's impure, right? And here are the ramifications. According to the Rambam, God didn't say that. He said, like, here are some rules, and you can use them to figure it out. According to the Ramban and the Ritva, what did God say?
We're going to figure it out, that either can work, but it's up to us to decide which is correct.
Right. So what does it mean it can work? I mean, God said, here's a sheretz, here's an insect. You know, you could argue this to say that it's pure, and you could argue this to say it's pure. You can argue 49 ways. I don't think 49 is such an important number. It's an example. Right? You could argue 20, 30, 40, 50 ways that it's pure. And you could argue 20, 40, 50 ways that it's impure. You guys decide how you want to pass it.
But you said that the sheretz was impure, right?
No, that's according to the Ravid, the first week.
No, what I'm saying, I'm asking.
Well, halacha is impure. But the God didn't tell us the halacha.
So then where would it come from? I'm saying it had to come from a pasuk, right? So
no, God told us, the oral law, listen, some things are based in the Torah and some things are not, right? So according to the Ramban, just to clarify before we really get into fully understand this opinion, according to the Ramban and this whole, the constitutive view that we're talking about today, there's still such a thing called halacha moshe misina. Everyone, we'll review all the opinions again next time we meet and like move past this, but everyone agrees to certain things, right? Everyone agrees there's such a thing as halacha moshe misina. Everyone agrees there's something a perishim akul misina. The Rambam is the one who made these nice categories, but like everyone agrees that such a thing exists. Everyone agrees there's yod gimel midos, right? The question is like, in addition, right? So these things aren't, all these opinions are not so different, but they are slightly different. We're really highlighting the differences.
No, I understand. I'm asking what is written in the Torah about sheretz?
Yeah, so the Torah.
You could give me a different example, but I mean, like, what does it say in there that they can choose whether it's impure or pure? Usually, the Torah would say, okay, this is pure, and then maybe if we don't know what the species are, then we would say, okay, these rabbis say this, we go with A. But I'm asking, like, if it says sheretz is impure.
The Torah does say sheretz is impure, so it's not such a great example. Yeah, Jero?
But it also doesn't have to be concrete in the Torah for that. Like, it's the whole point of, there's tons of times where things aren't taken literally is, like, that's like part of that whole not taking everything literally system.
Right, it means, like, listen,
regardless of what it's.
We have a Gemara, and the Gemara has, like, millions of machloksim, right?
Yeah.
Millions of disagreements. So the question is, like, that's what we've been struggling with 3 weeks. Why are there all these disagreements, right? So according to the Ravid, the first opinion, the first week, it's because we lost it all. God told us all the answers, we just lost it. According to the Rambam, he gave us principles we have to figure out. According to the Ramban, and now the Ritva, God didn't just give us principles, he gave us both sides of the equation. He gave us, we'll try not using an example, which is like maybe not such a good idea, but without using a specific example, any machlokas you can think of, right? I don't know, what's a good thing? Yeah. You don't have to say anything you can think about in machlokas, right? I don't know. Reheating liquids on Shabbat. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch says that you can reheat liquids. The Ramah says you can't. Okay, fine. It's based on the whole thing. So God would have said, "Hey, can you reheat?" He said when he was teaching Moshe about reheating liquids, he said, "So let's talk about reheating liquids. You know, I think maybe you can reheat them because of this, and you can reheat them because of this, you can reheat them because of this, and maybe you can't reheat them because of this, and can't reheat them because of this. You guys will figure out what you want to do."
So everything is okay.
Not everything's okay.
Based on our leaders at the time.
The Sanhedrin.
Everyone.
The Sanhedrin has the power to fight it out, and then we follow the majority.
Why doesn't God just want to tell you what, I mean...
Okay, that's a good question. Like, so that's what we're going to talk about in the next class. Right now we're talking about what was given. Let's hold the why.
Okay.
Why?
Like why it's so complicated. Like why there has to be such back and forth between everything.
So that's what we're struggling with, right? Yeah. According to the Ritva, there's such back. According to the Ravid, the first week, there's such back and forth because we lost it all.
Everything.
According to the Ramban, we didn't lose anything. Yeah. God wanted it to be this way.
Right.
He wanted you and your chavrusa to be sitting in the base midrash in Midrash Rachel, fighting out what's the real answer. Yeah.
When he says in each generation, like, what does that mean?
Okay, good. So I also don't want to get into that. I mean, you can give a whole shiur.
Oh my God.
We can give a whole shiur about how the Sanhedrin works, right?
No, when he says each generation, one doesn't mean in every generation when there only when there's a Sanhedrin. As in, is this specifically the Sanhedrin and not any other?
Where are you in the Ritva?
I'm just reading the last line.
He asked God about this answer in the matter, given that the Sanhedrin and each generation is ruling the Sanhedrin. Right, so let's assume we're talking about the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin itself has rules, right? I mean, like, we could give a whole shiur about how the Sanhedrin works, in terms of, like, you know, does this mean that, like, let's say in the, you know, Abai and Rava fight it out, you know, in the whole Sanhedrin, no, they're not the Sanhedrin, they're the Tanaim, whatever. The Sanhedrin fights it out, and they decide X, right? Does that mean their kids can be like, oh, I know our parents decided X, let's fight it out all over again, and we can decide again for ourselves? Or does it mean, like, once, so there's different opinions on this. The Rambam and Tosfos have one camp, right? Other people have a different camp. I didn't do enough research into it. I know little tids and tads there, but I don't want to, like, say a whole thing. But how the Sanhedrin works and when we're allowed to reevaluate things, right? This gets into, I have a whole footnote here about, this gets into why there are minority opinions included in the Gemara, right? If we already fought it out, what do we need the minority opinion anymore for? So maybe we can reevaluate the situation based on a Shas Tzach, right? If a situation of great need comes up. Or maybe if there's a Sanhedrin later that's greater in number and greater in wisdom, we're allowed to reevaluate everything. So how we play with things, how we come to conclusions is a separate conversation, more a technical discussion about how the Sanhedrin works.
Like, I'm still wondering if it's only the Sanhedrin.
Yeah, so let's assume for now it's only the Sanhedrin.
I don't know if I like that assumption.
So you think you want to say that, you know, your local Orthodox rabbi and, like, the two other friends can sit there and,
no,
like, re-decide everything?
No.
Yeah.
So then who can?
And that's how we get
it. I feel like, like, let's say the Vilna Gaon, didn't he disagree with things in, like, the Gemara?
Yeah.
Okay. So clearly there is a precedent.
Well,
did he disagree
with things in the Gemara or Rishonim?
I forget. He disagreed with
Rishonim.
You're right.
Okay. So we're not. Once again, I want to focus on the question. What was given on Har Sinai? A lot of these questions are important, but not for necessarily right now.
Okay.
Ms. Mel.
I know my question applies at this moment, but it's really important.
Okay. So hold it for a minute. Okay. Listen. The reason that these opinions are so different is because, first of all, so I want to say, I think that so I want to address two things quickly, and we'll keep going. We'll see the machlokas between the Ravid and the Ran. Even though I've presented it, and Halbertal presents it as, like, the Ravid class one, the Ravid class two, the Rambam, right? These three opinions. Really, you could say that the Ramban and the Rambam are really in kind of the same camp in terms of, like, you can call it, like, the rationalistic camp, in terms of, like, there's human interaction with the rules, with the law, we're figuring it out together, right? The Rambam and the Ramban are not so different. The only real, I'd say, well, they are, the big difference between Rambam last week and Ramban this week would be this idea that God himself gave multiple opinions. According to the Rambam, he gave rules.
Also, aren't both of those sides kind of necessary to have, kind of, as opposed to the Ravids as much? Whereas, remember, I can think of this till right now, you know, before the like, if we're going off of, like, the assumption of the Ravid, one of his points was that, like, we lost the kind of the interpretation because the people wouldn't study enough or all these things. Assuming that we can't really ever get back to that, then there isn't really a point of anything.
Everything could fall into question.
Yeah, but also that, if you're going off of that idea, like Yerida Hadoro and things like that, going off of that, then we'll never actually be able to get back to where it was before. So there
right,
isn't really
so
a point
to,
of having all of that.
Although, according to the Ravid, we're trying.
Yeah.
And we have rules of suck to work with.
But it's not like I'm saying that the point is to get back there, but the idea of a struggle as the potential to eventually get back there, even if you know you'll never, is that there, as much as you're probably never going to, there is the potential for it.
Right.
Whereas in that case, in the Ravid case, there is never the potential.
No, according to the Ravid, there is the potential. I mean, according to the Ravid, remember he said that there's only machlokas about the details, we never lost the principles. So you hope when you have machlokas about the details, one of the opinions is the right one. It's possible none of them are. And that's the scariness of the opinion. Right? That was a disadvantage of the opinion. But it's possible one of them's right.
Okay, so even in that opinion, there still is the potential.
Yeah,
okay.
Hopefully one of the...
Okay.
Yeah, he hopes that one of the shitas is the real one.
Okay.
Okay, so that was... Yeah.
Sorry.
According to the source, that means that the original way it was supposed to be is that every generation gets to reevaluate things and then change things. That's like what it's supposed to be like.
So once again, that was a conversation I had with Alana. What does it mean every generation? Let's call it for now like the Sanhedrin, and there's all sorts of rules about how that works. Doesn't mean like, you know, me and my two friends who happen to have smicha can like, you know, go and change all of Judaism.
But things are supposed to change with the time.
We're not going there. I'm saying like, yes and no.
The application can change.
Yes and no, maybe like, not the topic of today's shir.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have a Sanhedrin, the doors are wide open, but even the Sanhedrin themselves have rules. Like, I'm sure many of you have heard the rule, I mentioned it a few minutes ago, that the Sanhedrin can only change something if they're greater in number and wisdom. Right? So they have to be smarter and bigger than the previous Sanhedrin. Otherwise, like, you know, we just don't go chucking things out the window.
It makes you, like, become a society that, like, can't move forward properly.
Well, obviously, if new situations come up, you have to deal with them.
No, but, like, if you're stuck in the ways of the past and we're keeping the things that don't apply anymore, it just becomes a huge problem.
The public system is really flexible in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of ways for the application to change in a lot of situations, because situations can be, each situation is really different.
Yeah.
But
or not, yeah.
There's a lot of
for
ways
another time.
For flexibility.
For another time. Hopefully, some point in this fellowship. How
so
suck works.
Is it's an application.
Yeah. Why
are
we allowed to eat
now? Okay. Okay. So that is the Ramban, and that is the... Okay. That is the Ramban, and that is the Ritva.
I'll have a...
I can only talk this.
Yeah.
Okay, Revoisai. So we said the Ramban, we said the Ritva. Now what about the Ran?
Oh.
What about the Ran? Who's the Ran? Who's the Ran? Rabbi Nissim of Gerona. Right? Rabbi Nissim of Gerona, born in the great city of Barcelona, 1320 to 1380. Esti will give a... Sephardi dance lessons to all post shiur. The Ran writes in his Drashot HaRan, Drasha number 5. So just to give a little bit of background to this piece, it's about 5 billion words long. Extremely complicated. I didn't read the whole thing for this shiur, so that's full disclosure. And he really goes back and forth a lot of times and like is kind of vacillating about what his real opinion is and how the exact details of things work. So there is some unclarity even within him. So if some of what I'm giving over seems a little bit unclear, I don't take full responsibility. We'll blame the Ran for some of that. But I want to get at one point. I really just want to draw at one point. And you know, in fact, you know, we'll read the first paragraph quickly. But it's really just a spitback of what we said so far already. So the Ran writes in this first paragraph: "It is a known fact that the entire Torah written in oral was transmitted to Moshe, as it says in the tractate Megillah, Maseches Megillah, Rav Chiya bar Abba said in the name of Yochanan. The verse, and on them was written according to all the words," that's referring to the Luchos there, the Ten Commandments, "teaches that the Holy One, blessed be He, showed Moshe the details and prescribed by the Torah and by the sages, including the innovation they would later enact." And what are those? The reading of Megillah, the details provided by the rabbis are halachic disputes and conflicting views held by the sages of Israel, right? So it says here, just so we understand what he's saying, basically, once again, the idea that God gave conflicting opinions. Right, and conflicting ideas on how to look at any topic. "Moshe learned them all by divine word with no resolution, every controversy in detail. Yet God also gave him a rule whose truth is manifest, i.e. favor the majority opinion, Achrei Rabbim Lahatot. As the sages of that generation saw fit, for the decision had already been delegated to them as written, and you shall come to the priest, the Levite, and to the judge that shall be in those days, and you shall not deviate." Right? So nothing, we read a little bit fast, but no new ideas here. Same thing the Ramban said, same thing the Ritva said. Now, in the Hebrew, it's the middle paragraph, if you'd like to read it later. The Ran goes ahead and quotes a Gemara. It's not actually the story of Tanur Shelachnai, the story which we should be familiar with, if we're not. But it's a similar story. In short, the story is... Do I want to go into it now? Uh Yeah, I'll go into the now. The story is... do I have it on the source sheet here?
So there's a second
one. No, that's not. That's like a different story similar. Yeah, it's really source 7. I didn't translate it. I apologize. You could look it up later. But in short, the story is... There's two groups so we can read it quickly. Zehu Taner Shel Achnai, source 7. My Achnai Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Sheikifu Dvarim. Okay, that's fine. Let's just go to the important part. Okay, so you have two people debating. And the end of the third, let's read the end of the, from the first line. Tana, but Oso Hayom, we're at the beginning of the second line, source 7. Heishiv Rebbe Lazar Kol Tshuvat Sheva Olam V'lo Kiblu Himenu. Amar Lahem, Im Halacha Kamosi Charuv Zeh Yochiach. Okay, so you have Rabbi, basically, in short, you have Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, right? And they're debating over the ritual status of an oven, right? They're trying to decide, is the oven pure, or is the oven ritually impure, right? So Rabbi Eliezer says, it doesn't matter who says what opinion for right now, but Rabbi Eliezer says it's pure, right? And the Rabbanan says it's impure. It could be the other way. The details aren't so important right now. But Rabbi Eliezer says, if I'm right, you know, he's one guy against the majority. Who do we normally follow?
Majority.
But what does the one guy say? Rabbi Eliezer says, if I'm right, let a carob tree magically grow out of this place. Once again, I don't exactly remember all the examples. They're not so important. Basically, all these miracles happen. Let a carob tree grow out of this place. Boom, a carob tree grows out. The Rambanan say, we don't care. The halacha follows the majority. If I'm right, let the river flow backwards. A miracle happens, the river starts flowing backwards. It says, if I'm right, let these walls fall down. Right? The walls of the base midrash, they fall down. And then the Rabbanah said, we don't care. The halacha follows the majority. And it says, if I'm right, let a baskol, let a heavenly voice come out and say I'm right. A heavenly voice comes out and says he's right. And the Rabbanah say, we don't care.
How can I'm going to see why they just don't change their opinion and then that's a majority opinion.
How can you be right?
No,
it's multiple opinions. Like, I've been the same opinion.
Oh, so good. So that's the whole point of the run. Oh, Tamarov hit the nail on the head. Okay, says the run. Good. So that's the story there, right? The opinion is that we don't care about miracles, we don't care about the heavenly voice, we follow the majority. Says the run. They all saw that Rebbe Eliezer follows the truth more than them. Right? The majority saw that all these miracles are happening. God himself, through a heavenly voice, said that Rabbi Eliezer has the truth. You don't. Right? And his miracles were all true and right, and it was ruled from heaven according to his, Rabbi Eliezer's, opinion. Nevertheless, they acted according to their ruling, meaning the Rabban and the majority followed themselves. They disagreed, and they did not follow the heavenly voice. They did not follow Rabbi Eliezer, even though he had all these miracles. Why? Since their reason tended to declare the oven impure, okay, so there you go, the Rambanan were the ones saying impure, even though they knew that they rule opposite the truth, they did not want to purify, because if they ruled the oven pure, they would have transgressed the words of the Torah. This is the case because their reason tended to rule the oven as impure, and the ruling was granted to the sages of the generation. Whatever they decide, it is what God commanded. So you have two very important points here. I want to focus on the first one first, because that's really our question. Then you have another tangent. Our question, once again, remaining our question, what was given on Har Sinai? Right? According to the Ramban, you have this idea that God gave multiple opinions. Right? Now, I said the Ramban's up here, this idea God gave multiple opinions. What's it? Last time we saw the Ritva. The Ritva basically said that, right? God gave multiple opinions, and God did not say which one was right. According to the Ran, that's not true. According to the Ran, God gave multiple opinions, and God didn't necessarily say which one is right, but he cares. God thinks opinion X is correct. But nonetheless, and this is why the run is even more radical, nonetheless, he still gave it to us being the Sanhedrin, the Chachamim, to decide according to the rule of follow the majority. And in this story, says the run, even though they know they're quote-unquote wrong, right? They know God thinks the other way. Nonetheless, they'll follow their opinion because God gave a system, and the system says follow the majority, even in this crazy case where a heavenly voice told you the opinion. The system follow the majority never breaks. Now my question on this, which can be put in brackets and we don't really have to deal with, or we could at a later time, is why can't the system be follow the majority, but the majority will listen to a heavenly voice, right? But we also know we don't paskal like a baskol. We don't paskal like a heavenly voice for whatever reason.
Couldn't that just be because technically it's always the same thing? Meaning if both are given by God, then we have a system.
Yeah, so the problem is that according to the Ritva says they're all given by God, and God doesn't really care which one you choose. God doesn't have a right or wrong, right? God just has a right. God says this and this. God says there's right and there's left, but he doesn't say you should choose right, you should choose left. We figure that out. According to the Ran, God gave the different options, but he also said which one to choose. What? He didn't say which one is right, but he has an opinion.
I agree, but I'm saying, what's it called? The only thing is, his opinion is also operating from Hatos.
Right. So basically what they're saying is that follow the system, even if you happen to know in a few cases which one that God wouldn't necessarily agree.
Also because the person could be a shout that's big.
Right, so we are worried about things like that. So just to read, just to fully, we'll take questions in a second, but just to fully explain what we're saying.
Meaning, smoke and mirrors, like.
No. But how does that play well off
the assumption is impossible without smoke and mirrors. Like, they knew. Like, that's the assumption.
Right, so.
You
so
need your answer,
yeah.
Like,
no,
that's
true.
By the way, I think. No, can't that also. Can't that also explain why we followed base Hillel when it came to the Baskel saying the Baskel went base Hillel?
Why?
Because there's no offer. The question was which one they go by. We're talking about real people.
Is
I don't also always go by. I mean, you do, but maybe there are times that one by Shana,
though. We don't specifically not follow that.
Right.
Because,
also, isn't that part of just because you don't need to. There's the idea of putting a fence around first, there's also the idea of not. You don't need to necessarily. But you don't need to go. There's also, like, a too-many fences kind of thing,
And that's all, like, rabbinic decrees, which, like, we're not really getting into. I mean, the rabbis have the right to make decrees, but that's a separate thing. That's not trying to get back to what happened in Harsina.
No, not that, but, like, if there's a lenient opinion and a
non-lenient
opinion, and they're both technically right, and there's nothing wrong with doing one with the other.
Okay.
And one of them isn't, like, a slippery slope thing. That's that a whole side point. It doesn't make, then following the lenient one, if anything, makes sense. Like the Occam's razor idea, the simple explanation.
Okay.
I've noticed.
Simple explanation is the best one.
Just lenient doesn't
need simple. Yeah, I don't know if it really ties in.
But it allows for a little more simplicity in the process of certain things. That's the
also
part of the leniency, as opposed to stringency. Not necessarily simplicity of mental thought, but simplicity in action potentially, or certain other things.
The whole point is that you go after the majority
and
you
know
that
doesn't
begin with.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay, let's, Jay, we'll come back to it at the end, okay? And I know someone else
wants
to make another point.
I'm talking about what? I'm talking, yeah. The specific they held Ray Charles there.
Okay, let's leave this big example. So just to reiterate the point here. So Halbertel writes that on one that the Ritva, right? Remember the Ritva is the one who said that there's opinions but there's no right answer. The Ritva on the one hand grants a greater constitutive power to the sages. Why? Because they shape the truth of the matter out of a completely open-ended revelation. Right, according to the Ritva, it's completely open-ended. There's these opinions. You can argue this way, you can argue that way, and like you figure out how you want to do it. On the other hand, although the sage's constitutive power, according to the Ran, is more limited in scope, because like there is a right answer, it's more daring in its application. Since according to the Ran, the sages constitute halachic answers even against what they know to be God's view of the matter. So that's a big machlokas here between the Ran and the Ritva about how to in this camp. But the basic idea is that God gave a lot of opinions. And either, according to the Ran, he has an opinion he likes, according to the Ritva, he doesn't have an opinion he likes, but still, it's the sages who have to figure it out. So, yeah, let's work at the chart for a second, for those who have their charts. For those who don't, you fail. So, what is the first box? Does everyone actually have their chart? It's so impressive.
I will.
Wow. Okay. According to the chart, okay, so what is the point of the halakhic process? So what's the point of the halakhic process according to the Ramban? What are we doing by arguing about stuff?
Getting real answers, knowing what we need to follow.
Right, we're figuring out which of the opinions are we going to apply the halakha lamaisa, right? We have to follow one of these opinions. We have all these sparot, we have all this logical reasoning one way and logical reasoning the other way, but we got to do one thing, so we're trying to figure out what's going to be the halakha. And what's the second box?
Oh, you don't have your charm?
That's what I said. No one heard it when I said it. I was like, oh yeah, look at this.
Sorry. You're not really smarty. Esty, you can be chutzpah, because she's smarty.
Sorry. I'm not that smarty, I apologize.
Reason for mahloket? So what's the reason for mahloket according to the Ramban?
To decide.
Huh?
To decide.
No, why is there machlokas in the world?
They're both right.
Because God gave us machlokas. According to the Ramban, God gave us machlokas. Right? God couldn't make up his mind. Or he could make up his mind according to the Ran, but he wanted to give the different logical explanations anyways and didn't necessarily want to tell us how he made up his mind. God basically wanted there to be machlokas. Right? Now, why is a good question for next week. What are the advantages of this approach? No one likes it, I see.
I don't know, it gives more power to the rabbis.
That's an advantage. I say nothing's lost in transmission, right? There's nothing. We don't have to say anything's lost in transmission. That's good.
It gives a purpose of why humanity exists.
Okay, good. It gives a lot of power to humanity, right? It gives a lot of power. I think it's very empowering. It gives a lot of power to us. Meaning, like, obviously, we're not on the Sanhedrin, but even, like, rabbis today, they have to decide things, and the Sanhedrin has to decide things that if you study and you become a Talmid Chacham, right, and you know a lot, then you can be part of the conversation, that the conversation is given for us to have.
And work on how the application works for everything.
But couldn't it get to a point where it's like, but who cares what we choose, because whatever we choose is the halacha.
No.
Yeah, but we're obviously empowered with the responsibility to try to decide what's right.
But, like, what's the responsibility of whatever we choose is right?
So, according to the Ran, the question is obviously much more on the Ritva. According to Ran, there is a right answer. We got to try to find it.
No, it is much more on the Ritva.
So, according to the Ritva, yeah, but God gave us a responsibility to decide what you think is right. And you can't just be like, yeah, I don't know, I want to get to 7-Eleven to get my Slurpee, let's just go see. You know? Like, you gotta figure out what you think is right. You gotta analyze the sources. And
there's a certain point where, like, maybe there's so much machlokas and you're just like, but, like, you know, like, how can. I feel like if you know that there's a right answer or you're working towards something in a certain way, like, there's a different type of motivation than.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fair.
I agree with you.
We also have to realize, and I think this is an important point.
Best decision possible for yourself.
No, but if you know that your decision is not wrong, whatever decision you make. It's also
not that they're all equal.
That's why they're not going to let you on the Sanhedrin.
No, but also...
That's why. Super empowering.
I think also that you can't necessarily just take from this that everything is wrong, or everything's right, and they're all equal necessarily, but that I think there can still be a best answer in each situation, depending on the situation.
I don't know if I agree.
Circumstances.
But he's saying there's not. I hear a lot of things.
But the fact is that they can read in every generation. Obviously, you're saying different circumstances, but at the same time, they're coming to a different halakhic conclusion, different generations. That's not called the same right answer.
How does the second process work?
Gosh.
Oh, because it has the potential to change, therefore it's not.
No. Well, I'm just saying that if everything's right, what's the point of fighting it out? Just, like, pick from a hat and go bite there.
That's like anything. Anything has a possibility to happen.
All right, I want to answer this. I want to kind of, I'm not going to really answer this, but I'll kind of answer it, and I'll kind of test it, tie into Esty's point of, like, how they know all this. You have to realize, and I think it's a little bit hard for us to comprehend, that I kind of introduced the sheer like this at the very, very beginning, that this is not really a pure academic study in terms of, like, you know, Chazal weren't sitting there and thinking, you know, like, what was given on Har Sinai, right? And also, like, all these opinions are based in different Gemaras. So even in the time of Gemara itself, you have different traditions, kind of, about what was given on Har Sinai, because it's almost like, you know, the example my friend gave me, and maybe Varel will think this is good, and you have to be a linguist, I don't know if I'll fully understand this, but you know, it's kind of like when you learn to speak English, right? Sometimes you know that, like, as we learn to speak English, I don't know if I'm still learning, but, you know, especially in this country, or maybe you guys should learn from me. But, you know, when you learn to speak English, sometimes just like, oh, that kind of sounds right. And you're like, I know this is how you write a sentence, but I can't, like, go back and tell you why the rules are like this. I don't even know what the rules are, I just know it kind of works this way, right? And then, like, later you can go to get a PhD in English, and you're like, oh, it's because of this fancy rule that this is how the sentence structure, and the idea, right? Like, the rabbis were just doing Torah and doing halacha and discussing it and fighting it out. Like, this idea of, like, why should we bother fighting about this? You know, well, it's all right. They were fighting about it because they'd always been fighting about it, because that's just, like, how Torah works, right? Then someone...
Well, except according to the Ravid.
Well, no, according to the Rabbi, they were also fighting about it.
But it's not just like that's not how Torah necessarily
right, but
has to
so be. Then someone woke up in the Middle Ages, right?
Voltaire.
And was kind of like, how, why are we doing... what?
Voltaire. And Immanuel Kant.
I'm saying, like, as philosophy changed, as people thought differently, at some point they started asking the question of, like, how do we define the system? What is the system, right? That's a new question to a certain extent. We just kind of were in the system, and we were the Tanaim and Amoraim were just taking the Mishnah and trying to explain it, and they had oral traditions, and, you know, and then they were discussing the Beis Midrash, and, like, no one really asked the question so much of, like, what was given on Har Sinai, how does this work? It wasn't a question. It was just, what? Okay, there you go. I said something about it. Like, it wasn't really, no one really, it wasn't like, no one really, this wasn't bothering people. It was just kind of like, this is the system, and we try to fight towards the truth. No one really thought about, well, what did God give us? So that's why you have a lot of sense clarity. Next week,
That's kind of all parallel with the rest of the academic world.
Right.
How do we know the book is true? Because it says so in the book.
No, well, we're not really talking about that so much. Right.
What?
The conversation about the conversation didn't happen. You just had the conversation. And then when they tried to have the conversation about the conversation, you realize there's Gemaras that contradict each other, and you have these different opinions. Next week we'll see. There's a huge tshuva from the Chavos Yair, Rav Yair Bachrach. It's he's probably sorry, maybe.
I
might have made that up. It's like also a billion pages long, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But in his tshuva, he kind of goes through and he's like, "Well, which one of these is right?" And he bounces back between all of them and say like, "Well, what about the Ravid? And this is these flaws and the Rambam and these flaws." So talk about some of it to point some things out, and then we'll see which one he goes with. But you know, this conversation is kind of the conversation about the conversation, really the best way to say it. Or the meta conversation is almost a quote unquote new thing. Like the Rishonim are the first ones to really be talking about it this way, and you know this machlokas has kind of gone on forever, but not formulated as well as it is. Just kind of figure out like why do we have machlokas and trying to get back there. It was kind of like we just did.
Surely there's a time before that.
Well, the Gemara just had machlokas. They didn't really.
Yes, but there's a time before the Gemara.
Yeah.
So maybe there was presumably a point, whether it was when Moshe came down from Har Sinai, when someone...
No, obviously one of these is true.
Yeah.
Right? They can't all be true. Right?
They can't.
They are mutually exclusive in terms of truth.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, I don't think there was ever a time where, like, the whole world held one.
That was
Huh? It might have been, like, no one really thought about it.
So then what did they hold if they didn't hold one? If no one thought about it.
They didn't really think about... They talked about the law. They didn't talk about where did the law come from? How does the law work?
They could have held different things, but they didn't... They just were like, okay, it's a different menhah.
They didn't hold... I'm not talking about what did they hold, like, is Arki's muksa, Arki's not muksa. I'm talking about, like, they didn't hold... They didn't have an opinion about, like, what did God give Moshe.
They just said, okay, we shechted an animal, that's how we do it.
Right, and they said, like, what do you mean? My grandfather said shechted this way, your grandfather shechted this way. Who's right? And then, like, let's look at previous sources about the question, but not about, like,
so
how do we...
they didn't ask that, but now we
are. They didn't have... Is this right?
Right, but I'm saying, but wouldn't you find it weird,
they asked,
I was doing something and you were my neighbor and you were doing something else?
No, so that's what they're fighting about. They're
how did they not have that conflict before, I think is what she's asking.
So that's what we're talking... We're talking about... Right, so that's what we're analyzing now. They had the conflict of you say to Shech this way, and I say to Shech this way, and so we fight about let's try to prove whose way is right.
Right.
But they didn't necessarily have the question of why are we disagreeing.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And then eventually it got to that point, and then they chose one specific way of Shech.
They had to fight it out, you know. And if they were the rabbis in the Beis Midrash and the Gemara, then eventually got recorded the way they fought it out, and then they were shown them in the Shulchan Aruch and the Yada. But why are we fighting? That's what we're talking about now. We've asked this question a few times of why do we respect earlier generations? How does this make us affect authority? So the model affects the notion of authority as well, that the authority of scholars in matters of halacha do not rest on the proximity to the source, right? And this idea, it's not that the earlier generations are closer to Matan Torah, right? Because here, the source is open-ended to start with. Rather, it's based on the privilege the Torah itself gave the Chachamim. And therefore, it's a challenge to the interpretive process through an appeal to the true meaning of text is ruled out, since it is the court that constitutes the meaning of the multiplicity of given opinions. Right? There's a multiplicity of given opinions, and the Chachamim have to decide which one is which. So it comes no surprise, then, that this constitutive view, generational gaps are in theory not crucial, right? So we're not gonna say here you can't disagree with previous generations just because they're closer to the Masorah, right? Not because they're close to Har Sinai, because in Har Sinai time there was also multiple opinions. We still are gonna say that there are rules about just not like chucking everything that was and starting all over again every 20 years, but not because it's 20 years earlier, like not because they're 20 years closer to Har Sinai. Right, that's where the Ramban says, permission has been granted to the rabbis of each generation to resolve disputes raised by the sages as they see fit, even if their predecessors, right, he quotes here the Ran is saying, even if their predecessors were greater or more numerous. And we have been commanded to accept their decisions, whether they correspond to the truth or to the opposite. So we have this idea here that, you know, exactly how Sanhedrin works, exactly when we're allowed to disagree with earlier sources is really a shiur for another time. Hopefully we'll try to get there. But in terms of, you know, is a previous generation inherently holier, or inherently closer to the truth? The answer would be no, because, you know, at Har Sinai there's also multiple opinions, so there still continues to be multiple opinions. Okay, shkoyach, Rabbi Yisrael.